Hello and welcome to our program, Business News, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I am Dennis Martin, and during the next half hour, I will be reading articles from CNBC, NPR, CNN, and USA Today here on OWL Radio. Our first article is from CNBC, written by Jeff Cox. The Fed's path to a Goldilocks economy just got a little more complicated. Here are the key points. A higher than expected payrolls number and wage reading add to the delicate tightrope walk the Fed has to execute. The numbers would indicate that 3.75 percentage points worth of rate increases have so far had little impact on labor market conditions. Fed Chairman Jerome Powell earlier this week outlined concerns he has about inflation and the jobs market in particular. The inflation outlook, while very uncertain at best, has a path forward that is consistent with a Goldilocks scenario, Moody's economist Mark Zandi said. And here is the article. As far as jobs reports go, November's wasn't exactly what the Federal Reserve was looking for. A higher than expected payrolls number and a hot wage reading that was twice what Wall Street had forecast only add to the delicate tightrope walk the Fed has to navigate. In normal times, a strong jobs market and surging work paychecks would be considered high-class problems, but as a central bank seeks to stem persistent and troublesome inflation, this is too much of a good thing. The Fed can ill afford to take its foot off the gas at this point for fear that inflation expectations will rebound higher, wrote Jefferies chief financial economist Aneta Markowska in a post non-farm payrolls analysis in line with most of Wall Street Friday. Wage growth remains consistent with inflation near 4%, and it shows how much more work the Fed still needs to do. Payrolls grew by 263,000 in November, well ahead of the 200,000 Dow Jones estimate. Wages rose 0.6% on the month, double the estimate, while 12-month average hourly earnings accelerated 5.1%, above the 4.6% forecast. All of those things together add up to a prescription of more of the same for the Fed. Continued interest rate hikes, even if they're a bit smaller than the 3/4 percentage point per meeting run the central bank has been on since June. Little effect from policy moves. The numbers would indicate that 3.75 percentage points worth of rate increases have so far had little impact on labor market conditions. We really aren't seeing the impact of the Fed's policy on the labor market yet, and that's concerning if the Fed is viewing job growth as a key indicator for their efforts, said Elizabeth Kofoot, senior economist at Lightcast, a labor market analytics firm. Much of the street analysis after the report was viewed through the prism of comments Fed Chairman Jerome Powell made Wednesday. The central bank chief outlined a set of criteria he was watching for clues about when inflation will come down. Among them were supply chain issues, housing growth, and labor costs, particularly wages. He also went about setting caveats on a few issues, such as his focus on services inflation minus housing, which he thinks will pull back on its own next year. The labor market, which is especially important for inflation and core services, ex housing, shows only tentative signs of rebalancing, and wage growth remains well above levels that would be consistent with 2% inflation over time, Powell said. Despite some promising developments, we have a long way to go in restoring price stability. In a speech at the Brookings Institution, he said he expected the Fed could cut the size of its rate hikes, the part that markets seemed to hear as grounds for a post-Powell rally. He added that the Fed likely would have to take rates up higher than previously thought and leave them there for an extended period, which was the part of the market seemed to ignore. The November employment report is precisely what Chair Powell told us earlier this week he was most worried about, said Joseph Lavoronia, chief U.S. economist at SMBC Nikko Securities. Wages are rising more than productivity as labor supply continues to shrink. To restore labor demand and supply, monetary policy must become more restrictive and remain there for an extended period. The path to Goldilocks. To be sure, all is not lost. Powell said he still sees a path to a soft landing for the economy. That outcome probably looks something like either no recession or just a shallow one, nevertheless accompanied by an extended period of below-trend growth and at least some upward pressure on unemployment. Getting there, however, likely will require almost a perfect storm of circumstances: a reduction in labor demand without mass layoffs, continued easing in supply chain bottlenecks, a cessation of hostilities in Ukraine, and a reversal in the upward trend of housing costs, particularly rents. From a pure labor market perspective, that would mean an eventual downshifting to maybe 175,000 new jobs a month. The 2022 average is 392,000, with annual wage gains in the 3.5% range. There is some indication the labor market is cooling. The Labor Department's household survey, which is used to calculate the unemployment rate, showed a decline of 138,000 in those saying they are working. Some economists think the household survey and the establishment survey, which counts jobs rather than workers, could converge soon and show a more muted employment picture. The biggest disappointment was the strong wage growth number, Mark Zandi, chief economist at Moody's Analytics, said in an interview. We've been at 5% since the beginning of the year. We're not going anywhere fast, and that needs to come down. That's the thing we need to most worry about. Still, Sandy said he doubts Powell was too upset over Friday's numbers. The inflation outlook, while very uncertain at best, has a path forward that is consistent with a Goldilocks scenario, Sandy said. 263,000 versus 200,000. That's not a meaningful difference. Let's move over to National Public Radio, NPR. What to know about the West's new efforts to slash Russia's oil revenue? The article was written by Jackie Northam. The United States and its allies are about to deliver a double blow to Russia aimed at starving its oil revenues. First, the European Union will ban all seaborne imports of Russian oil, a move that takes effect Monday. Also, the U.S. and other members of the group of seven leading economies will attempt to impose a price cap on the oil Russia continues to sell to other parts of the world. On Friday, the EU tentatively agreed to set a price ceiling at $60 per barrel. The two moves are intended to limit Russia's ability to fund its war in Ukraine, but are designed to prevent disruptions in oil supplies that could cause higher prices. Analysts say the price cap, spearheaded by the U.S. Treasury Department, could be difficult to enforce. Ben Cahill, senior fellow at the Center for Strategic and International Studies in Washington, says a price cap on Russian oil has never been tried before. Most energy sanctions, like those against Iran and Venezuela, target volume, not price. What policymakers are trying to do is cut the world's largest oil exporter out of the market to a large degree, he says. They're trying to cut Russia off from Europe, which has always been one of the largest export destinations. Most of EU will stop buying any Russian oil. The EU ban on seaborne Russian oil imports was part of a package of sanctions passed in June. It also includes barring maritime services, such as shipping insurance and financial services, on any tanker carrying Russian crude. Hungary and a couple of other countries can continue to import Russian oil through pipelines. Most of the world's maritime services for oil tankers are based in the UK and the European Union, so that ban would apply to virtually all tankers plying the world's waters. The US was concerned that the EU ban on oil and insurance could remove at least 1 million barrels a day of Russian crude off the market, causing a sharp spike in the price. Russia supplies about 10% of the world's oil production. The EU sanctions package created concerns that there would be a potential supply shock, Cahill, the energy analyst, says. And so the proposed price cap is a way to try to keep those volumes on the market, but still curtail Russia's revenue. The price cap is meant to keep supply coming, but limit Russia's profits. Allowing oil sales under a price limit is a way to make sure the insurance ban doesn't stop the oil from flowing. Under the plan, shipping services and insurance could be provided to tankers carrying Russian crude as long as it is purchased for a price set by Western nations. All 27 members of the EU needed to agree on the price. Poland pushed for around $20 per barrel, a figure rejected by many EU countries as too low. The final price was agreed at $60 per barrel, which could fluctuate over time. A mechanism that Poland pushed for was included in the final deal. The price cap would be kept at least 5% below the market rate. It was a balancing act between finding a price low enough to limit Russia's profits, but high enough to keep it producing oil. Russian crude oil already sells well below other global oil market prices. China and India buy Russian oil, and it's unclear how they view the price cap. There's skepticism that the price cap will work. For one thing, it will need other countries beyond the G7 and the EU to sign on to the plan. China and India are key. Both have gone on a buying spree of Russian oil since the war in Ukraine. Arkady Javorkayan, a commodity strategist at Citi Research, says India imported very little oil from Russia before the conflict. Now it's helping fill the Kremlin's coffers, importing about 900,000 barrels a day, which he says is substantial. That allowed Russians to divert some of the oil initially going to Europe to India, Javorkayan says. China, India, and Turkey have been getting Russian oil at a big discount, about $20 less per barrel. They'll continue to hammer out a good price if they believe they have leverage once the price cap sets in. Cahill says efforts to get countries outside the G7 on board with the plans have not been successful, in part because they're wary of the complicated plan. I think there's also some irritation with Western sanctions and the idea that, you know, the US and the EU are really pushing countries to do this, and they're interfering with the global oil market, Cahill adds. They have a lot of skepticism, and I don't think that India and China will sign the plan and fully endorse it. And according to Javorkayan, there is some doubt Russia can find enough tankers willing and able to work around the sanctions. And then there's the question of insurance. Russia started to work on developing its domestic insurance company, he says. It has been in discussion with China and India and other trade partners of having a different insurance that would allow them to continue to import. Enforcing the price cap will be a challenge. The G7 price cap plan depends heavily on documentation and proof about where the oil on a tanker is coming from and how much it costs. Michelle Weiss-Brockman, an analyst with London-based Lloyd's List, a maritime news agency, says there's already a lot of illicit oil trade, especially moving sanctioned oil from Iran and Venezuela. She says it involves everything from falsifying documents to clandestine ship-to-ship transfers in the middle of the night. The evasion tactics used by Iran and Venezuela can be easily met and borrowed by Russia to continue shipping without that compliance to the price cap, she says. It's very likely that sanctions evasion is going to be a hallmark of what happens post December 5th. Russia could try to exact some retaliation using fuel for leverage. Analysts and officials have warned that the West's new actions could provoke Moscow to retaliate by cutting off remaining natural gas supplies to European countries. Russian President Vladimir Putin has said he will not sell oil to any country that is compliant with the price cap, and that Russian oil will find other customers willing to risk breaking sanctions. Other countries could help him. OPEC Plus, an alliance of oil producers that Russia co-chairs along with Saudi Arabia, is concerned about the idea of buyers colluding, countries banding together to try to influence the oil market and target certain producers. They worry that if the West can do it to Russia, then it could someday do the same against other oil producers. Members of the oil cartel are due to meet in Vienna on Sunday, one day before the EU oil embargo and the price cap are due to begin. Let's get back to the domestic issue here. This article is from CNN, and it's written by Nathaniel Meyerson, CNN Business. Family dollar is a mess. It hopes lowering prices will help. Family dollar has lost ground in the dollar store race for years. Now, the discount chain hopes lowering prices will help win back customers on tight budgets. Its main competition is the much larger Dollar General, which has grown rapidly over the past decade. The companies battle for many of the same low-income shoppers in cities and rural areas, and both sell mostly food and everyday items for between $1 and $10. But Family Dollar's prices can be 10 to 15% higher than Dollar General's and other discount competitors. Higher prices have contributed to weak performance, so the chain is dropping those prices in an effort to better compete. The price cuts are part of Family Dollar's new management's attempt to overhaul the company's brand image, and they come as most companies are raising prices to offset higher costs and consumers battle decades-high inflation. Even Dollar Tree, Family Dollar's parent company that caters to middle-class suburban shoppers, hiked prices to $1.25 last year after 35 years of sticking to $1. Although lower prices will squeeze Family Dollar's profits in the short term, the executives believe the measures are necessary to revive the chain. Family Dollar has not said by how much the prices will drop, and a spokesperson noted prices change constantly and vary by product. Analysts estimate that the chain's prices have fallen by around 5% since the company announced the initiative in August. Prices are at parity with key competitors. Dollar Tree CEO Michael Witynski said on an earnings call last week, Family Dollar, from a pricing perspective, is in the best position in more than a decade. The strategy appears to be working so far. Last quarter, foot traffic to Family Dollar stores increased for the first time in 3 years. It's a logical step, Michael Montani, a retail analyst at Evercore ISI, said of the price cuts. Now, can they build on that momentum? Family Dollar, with its 8,000 or so locations, has been plagued by a range of issues, including cluttered, understaffed, and in some cases, hazardous stores. Shoppers have shifted to Dollar General, Walmart, Target, and other low-priced chains to stretch their budgets. Dollar Tree bought Family Dollar in 2014 for almost $9 billion. But these problems started before the acquisition, according to analysts. Still, the combined company has struggled in the 8 years since then, and its stock price has trailed competitors. Some Wall Street investors have pressed Dollar Tree to sell Family Dollar. Family Dollar has closed hundreds of locations in recent years and renovated others. The chain has also experimented with different formats to try to improve sales, such as combination stores that feature selections of both Family Dollar and Dollar Tree merchandise designed specifically for small towns, and new H2 Family Dollar stores showcasing special Dollar Tree, $1.25 merchandise sections, and more freezers and refrigerators than traditional Family Dollar stores. The company hopes these lower prices, new store designs, and better merchandise will reverse Family Dollar's decline. "Let's clean it up, fill it up, and straighten it up," Witinsky said. Here's an article from CNN by Danielle Warner Bronner. This is what McDonald's drive-thru of the future could look like. McDonald's is hoping a drive-thru lane with a food conveyor belt, a pickup room for delivery workers, and a shelf where people can grab their orders will make life easier for customers on the go. The features are being tested in a restaurant near Fort Worth, Texas, the burger chain announced Thursday. Speedy service is crucial to fast food restaurants because customers may abandon a brand after experiencing long wait times. Moving customers quickly through the drive-thru is especially important because people who see a long line of cars might visit a competitor instead. Drive-thru times have gotten 45 seconds slower on average in 2022 compared to 2019 at industry-leading chains, according to this year's drive-thru report by QSR and InTouch Insight. As our customers' needs continue to change, we are committed to finding new ways to serve them faster and easier than ever before, Max Carmona, Senior Director of Global Design and Restaurant Development at McDonald's, said in a statement about the new concept. The test restaurant is smaller than most locations, designed specifically for customers who want takeout. Inside, there are kiosks for placing to-go orders, in addition to the pickup shelves and delivery rooms. Outside, customers will see dedicated parking spots for curbside pickup, as well as for delivery drivers. The order ahead lane is for customers who place their order using McDonald's mobile app before arrival. Once at the location, they can head to the dedicated lane where someone at a pickup booth will confirm the order. From there, customers pick up their order from a food and beverage conveyor belt. Driving down drive-through times. Although drive-through times are slower than they were in 2019, they've improved from last year, when a shortage of workers and an increase in demand for drive-through, delivery, and to-go orders sent restaurant operations into disarray. Restaurants want to keep moving in the right direction. To that end, a number of chains are exploring new drive-thru options. Taco Bell in June unveiled a concept restaurant with four drive-thru lanes and orders delivered via vertical lift from the kitchen. Burger King has explored triple drive-thru lanes and burger pickup lockers. Applebee's tried out a drive-thru window for the first time last year. McDonald's first announced plans to improve its drive-thru in 2020. In addition to adding drive-thru lanes and making it easier to pick up orders, restaurants have been investing in technology designed to make the experience go more smoothly, including digital menu boards and an artificial intelligence-enabled voice ordering. Here's an article from USA Today, written by Thalia Beattie from the Associated Press. Giving Tuesday raises $3.1 billion over 24 hours for charities in tough economy. Giving Tuesday raised a record $3.1 billion in 24 hours for charitable causes in the U.S. earlier this week, as the event that started as a hashtag in 2012 celebrated its 10th anniversary and its status as a staple of fundraising for nonprofits, the group's leader said. Despite the difficult economic year that many households have experienced, with inflation and the costs of basic goods, gas, and housing, people were still willing to give. Giving Tuesday CEO Asha Curran said, "That's really what we saw. Tuesday, she told the Associated Press, that whatever it is people are experiencing, they were as generous as they had the capacity to be. Giving increased about 15% from 2021's $2.7 billion, outpacing inflation, Giving Tuesday estimated. Donations were tallied using an array of data sources that include major community foundations, companies that offer fundraising software, the payment processor PayPal, and large grant makers like Fidelity Charitable and Vanguard Charitable. Okay, our next article is from CNBC, and it's Toyota secures funding to develop hydrogen fuel cell version of its Hilux pickup in the UK. And the article is written by Anmar Frangoul. The key points. Fuel cell technology involves hydrogen from a tank mixing with oxygen, which in turn produces electricity. Toyota says a fuel cell-powered prototype of its Hilux pickup will be developed at a plant in England. Once successful, performance results have been secured. The intention is to prepare the vehicle for small series production, the company adds. This article is coming from London. And it says, a consortium led by automotive giant Toyota will receive millions in funding to develop a hydrogen fuel cell pickup truck in the UK. In a statement Friday, Toyota said the fuel cell powered prototype of its Hilux pickup would be delivered at its plant in Burniston in the East Midlands of England. Toyota Motor Manufacturing UK is heading up the consortium, which is being backed by £5.7 million, of which is around $7 million, of industry funding and £5.6 million from the UK government. Thatcham Research, D2H, ETL, and Ricardo are also involved in the project. Although the initiative is being led by TMUK, Toyota said, technical support would come from Toyota Motor Europe, R&D. Within the scope of the funding bid, initial prototype Hilux vehicles will be produced at Burniston during 2023. It added, once successful, performance results have been secured. The intention is to prepare the vehicle for small series production. Fuel cell technology involves hydrogen from a tank mixing with oxygen, which in turn produces electricity. As the U.S. Department of Energy's Alternative Fuels Data Center notes, fuel cell electric vehicles emit only water vapor and warm air, producing no tailpipe emissions. The original version of the Hilux dates back to the 1960s, and several iterations of the vehicle have been developed since. The UK government said a fuel cell Hilux would be ideal for use in isolated settings where electric vehicle charging is impractical. Well, that is all the time I have for that article. I was almost finished with it. You have been listening to Business News on Owl Radio. You can listen to Owl Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.owlradio.org. Thank you for listening. This program will be replayed after 9 p.m. this evening. This is Dennis Martin saying goodbye from Owl Radio.